It's time for the Access of Easy podcast, the weekly technology digest that keeps you ahead of the curve. Brought to you by EasyDNS.com.
Welcome back, everybody, to Access of Easy. This is number 345, the latest and greatest data breaching and overreaching from your friends at EasyDNS and your friends at CBP, Len and Joey. What's going on, buddy? How are you?
Oh, man, it's a busy morning, busy day, busy everything. But you know what? What's that saying? That idle hands are the sign of the devil or something like that?
Devil's playground, maybe? Is that what it is?
Something like that. Whatever the heck it is. It's better to be busy because then things go quicker. And, you know, it just makes life more meaningful, I guess. But, yeah, how about you? How are things over there?
Great. Although I don't necessarily share that view, but it's good.
Well, I find when I'm busy, no matter what it is, just, you know, everything just kind of falls in place one way or another. When you have nothing to do, things get really problematic. When you have shit to do, things get a lot better, I find. I like being busy. I like having a list of things to do. I like being bombarded at times with things. Is when I could prioritize
drinking from the hose is it's not for everybody, but it does definitely make the days go by quicker. We may as well.
I love drinking from the hose. Love it.
Good for you, I guess.
Okay. Hey, when you're in the backyard doing stuff for the garden,
I haven't had a drink from the hose in probably like 3 or 4 years. Maybe I should start again. It can't be any worse than tap water, right? It's got to be about the same mineral quality. So
yeah. Well, there's a different taste to it from the hose. You get that like. I don't know. I have a rubber hose. You get that rubbery taste to it. I don't know. I like it. I'm kind of addicted to it in a way. I'm going to start filling up my glasses with the hose water.
How do you think they make bottled water? It's just a guy in his backyard filling up bottles of water and slapping a mountain scene on there. What do you mean? Everyone knows that, I thought.
100%. Yeah. There's no filter. There's no nothing. It's just the Detroit tap system.
So this week, we'll start like we always do with last week's quote. Once you replace negative thoughts with positive ones, you'll start having positive results. So that's why Willie Nelson giving life advice in between strumming his guitar and smoking the devil's lettuce. This week's quote, no one got that, by the way. So not a good job by anyone listening. This week's quote, there is only one thing in life worse than being talked about, and that is not being talked about. I think this is true. I'm a big fan of the all publicity is good publicity mantra. Are you? What do you think about that quote?
No, definitely not, because you could have obviously bad publicity and it's going to harm your reputation moving forward, especially if it's something like really bad. Like, you know, what if somebody they say has been to, you know, some sort of island out there? I'm not going to say what island, you know, you have that stigma attached to you for the remainder of your life. And so that's, you know,
something no to news. That. Yeah, you know, there's something to that. Okay, I'll give you that. So if you know the answer to who gave that quote, put it in the comments. You know the rules, no searching. And the next person, round of renewals will be on EasyDNS, which is fantastic. Can't beat that. So then we got 5 or 6 stories today we got to get through. Where do you want to start as far as this week's Access of Easy?
Well, Facebook, man. Facebook is a Midjourney. It's something I've never heard of before, but maybe because I'm not a Facebook user anyways. So it looks like hackers, they've been using a fake Facebook page to spread malware. And how are they doing this, you ask? Well, here we go. So the hackers, they've impersonated a popular AI art service, as I mentioned, Midjourney. And yeah, like I've never heard of this thing.
Midjourney, it's just an image generator, basically. You give it a prompt and it generates an image. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Is that specific to Facebook or is that outside
the realm? I don't know who owns it. I wouldn't be surprised if it was OpenAI, but it's like the same as the thing you can get in the Bing browser, basically. Like Bing will make you a picture as well. Anyway, doesn't matter.
Bing does that now.
Yeah, oh yeah, it's done it for a while.
Oh, I have no idea. Obviously, I don't use Bing that much, but either way. So, well, these guys or gals that are behind this, well, they hijacked an existing Facebook account and they turned it into a fake Midjourney page. And with this whole process, they gained over 1.2 million followers before it was finally taken down in March of 2024. And the fake page, it promoted a non-existent desktop version of Midjourney, and it tricked users into downloading the malware disguised as the non-existent software. And the researchers believe that the hackers are still active, and they created a new Facebook page that has over 600,000 followers. So they're still doing their craft out there, even though that they had their previous page taken down. So people, let's be honest, if you get some unsolicited messages on social media or some free promotion of software of, you know, something that's just too good to be true, like obviously it is too good to be true, because you know what? Just do some verification with the official source. If you think that it's coming from somebody, it looks like it's an official page, you could verify it. Try to, you know, don't click on any links. Go to the source page, see if they're actually offering this free thing. But it looks like for this fake page, there was a lot of different, there could be a lot of different signs you could see if there's something wrong. For example, if you look at misspelled names, grammatical errors, or lack of reviews from legitimate users, that's probably a sign of things to, you know, something's up. But anyways, people out there, they got to be more diligent, use security software, try to block as much malware as possible. But I think that this is casting a net that's probably catching the greatest amount of fish, because let's be honest, Facebook users are probably the least likely to employ any security tactics. And I can't believe I'm painting them all with the same brush here, but if I have to categorize social media users into security silos, I would say that Facebook users are probably the least likely to have security in mind. So I'll leave it at that.
I'm with you on that. It's funny that, you know, like we always talk about, the gap between figuring out there was a problem and reporting on it. The page was hijacked in June 2023 and made into a fake Midjourney page. Facebook shut the page down almost a year later, March 8th, 2024. Like they only shut it down about a month ago. And you can imagine how much damage was done in that time. As far as casting a wide net, you're spot on. Have you ever been on, I mean, maybe this is not a question for you, but I know when I grabbed a couple of the AI services as iPhone apps, like ChatGPT, Microsoft Copilot, to play around with them. Like I use them for our show once in a while. If I'm like, you know, stuck for stats or something like that, like I'll go and grab stats from the AI bots. You have to verify them, obviously, but it's a good starting point. When you go into the app store, the number of fake apps you have there, Len, is staggering. It's one after another after another. The app store doesn't really do a good job telling you which one is legit unless you know who the manufacturer or the provider of the app is. So I know, for example, that OpenAI does ChatGPT and not, you know, AI for everyone or whatever, or AI China or like whatever the manufacturer is. That's on the App Store. Here, if I look at the page that's provided from the Bitdefender screen cap, there's no way for you to know that this is, you know, bueno or no bueno, except that you would have to realize that you maybe never followed the page, or that, like you mentioned, your antivirus software is giving you a hard time when you fire up a desktop app. I got to ask you, when was the last time you downloaded a desktop app that wasn't easily verifiable either by, like, I don't know, by hash or by some other method? Because I don't even think that I could find an example of a desktop app that wasn't making clear that it was, you know, verifiable through some means or method for the average person. That's really the signal. And like you said, the Facebook user, the average user, just doesn't know that. They don't know. It's a good well to go back to if you're a malware provider.
You mentioned that there's a whole bunch of, and the app store, that there may be some fake apps on there.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I was always under the impression that Apple had a very stringent policy when it comes to.
It's bullshit.
Is that?
I mean, bull crap. Yeah.
Has it been getting worse over time, or has it always been?
It's hard. It's hard to regulate it. Like if I go on ChatGPT here, okay, the first app is, it's an ad. Chat on, powered by ChatGPT AI. That's not ChatGPT. Then there's a very slim, I'll kind of show you my app store here, very slim, in between these two bigger advertisements, there's a very slim thing there. That little slim white screen with no draw is ChatGPT. Then if you go down, AI chat, AI chatbot, AI chat, chatbot AI genie, Gemini AI chat. That's not Gemini. Gemini AI chat. And then the pictures all say Gemini. Chat AI. It's all garbage malware that's probably either going to try and get you to sign up for a subscription service and then just link you to the free version of the Bing or ChatGPT interface, or something more nefarious. The iPhone, the App Store does a good job in terms of making sure that people are not putting apps on there that are skirting Apple's 30% rule. That's for sure. Easy. Yeah. Easy to say that. But otherwise, like, you can get shitty apps on the App Store. I mean, crappy apps on the App Store basically easily, I would say. Like, it's been this way for a long time. Len, even if you went, even if in like the olden days before Twitter locked up its API, the Twitter third-party apps was another great example. There was tons of services like who unfollowed me or who's looking at my profile or whatever, that if you look for an app like Tweetbot, it would just feed you rows and rows and rows of clearly what is the word I'm looking for here? I can't find it right now, but scam apps, basically, right? It's just ridiculous. Wow. And because it's been this way for a long time. Now, I won't speak for like the other app stores. Windows, I know, has an app store that honestly I've used a few times for the CBP video rendering rig to grab like Clipchamp and stuff like that. And I have to say, the apps there, Len, in my limited experience, seems like a lot tighter.
Wow.
An ecosystem. Yeah. Yeah.
I haven't been an Apple user for well over a decade, but I always thought it was much better, much safer safer. I'm using the air quotes. I guess I was wrong, but well, whatever.
That's not what I see. Maybe it's my experience, but that's not what I see. Maybe I'm just searching for stuff that lends itself to that outcome, but I really can't imagine that I'm the only one.
So user beware. Be very diligent, whatever
big you time.
Install on your
Big time.
Well, let's talk about what's going on in the U.S. because there's been some recent development in the realm of U.S. data privacy legislation. And two U.S. lawmakers, which both I've never heard of, Kathy McMorris Rogers and Maria Cantwell, they have introduced a bipartisan draft bill for a federal data protection law. And the proposed legislation is dubbed the American Privacy Rights Act. Mm-hmm. And the aim of this is to establish and enforce data privacy rights for all U.S. citizens. And the bill is focused on giving people control over their personal information and restricting companies from tracking and selling data without consent. This sounds all very good.
Yep.
And it also mandates stronger cybersecurity standards for organizations to protect personal data that they hold from being hacked or stolen. And it's going to be giving enforcement powers to the FTC, the states, and individuals for any violations. So the question I have here is, why would he be proposing this, given in a state or in a time where data collection is very powerful? I suspect something like this is going to it's going to die in the vine. I don't think this is going to see the light of day. A lot of good press, and it sounds very good, but is there really a lot of support within not just lawmakers, but lobbyists as well? I suspect probably not. I think that you're probably going to have this thing somehow, it's going to get kiboshed one way or another, but sounds good. But I have reservations. This is really going to pass.
It notes here that there's a need for U.S. national privacy law based on similar principles to the EU GDPR. Like, who, just to depart from this story for a second, who thinks GDPR ended up being a net positive? If I look in Europe, there's not much there that tells me I want GDPR. There's talk about making sure that no one can be anonymous online. There's you know, government agents showing up at your door over mean tweets. There's all manner of things. Like, I don't want anything like what the EU has here or in the States. To your question about who would say no to this, I think everybody. One thing that's not mentioned in the article is that the U.S. government increasingly relies on the ability to find out who said what to who and when. And we've talked on this show about stories that are seeing a lot of momentum. Like, for example, YouTube being able to tell you who's watching certain videos if you needed it for law enforcement purposes or for this, this thought crime legislation that's making its way through the annals of legislature here in Canada. This is, to me, the direction things are actually going. And these people, you know, it's good publicity, but honestly, Len, like, if I told you, gun to your head, you had to decide or bet whether or not these people actually wanted to support these bills or just wanted the press, what would you bet? You know, I might bet on press, honestly. They know these things are not going to pass, and I'm not convinced they even support them. I would love to see the voting record of these two on other stuff of this nature. I bet you it would not surprise you. You know, like, were you in on Patriot Act reduxes? Were you in on other data collection attempts? Were you in on, you know, trying to vilify Zuckerberg for what he's doing? Like, were you in on all that or were you not? My guess is, there's a theme. It's a thematic, thread you could weave through all these things. And it's not new, right? Again, I find myself thinking of this all the time on this show and on CBP. that this is all just headed the same direction. Uniparty truly is the theory of, you know, relativity in politics. And it's just everything makes more sense if you assume that both parties are working for the interest of expanding the state against the individual. And this flies a little bit in the face of that. And so my initial instinct is to say that they actually don't want this and just want the publicity. Again, it's working because neither of us, for all the hours and nights we spend talking about politics, policy, and stuff related to data, especially through Bitcoin in this show, we've never heard of these people. So it's working a little bit, but I think that's probably what it's meant for.
There has been a hacker that leaked some 8.5 million records, and it's impacting the Environmental Protection Agency. Now, this story is pretty messed up. I'm going to just get to the part that's messed up more than anything else.
Sure.
So this is news coming out of the EPA, and it's with respect to what seems to be outdated data leak. That's what I find to be kind of messed up. So initial reports indicate that there was a, you know, the data breach at the EPA, and the hacker was able to leak a large amount of contact information. And the EPA says that they replied to this, and they responded by saying that they investigated the matter, and they stated that the data leak, the information was already available in the public domain.
No problem. This
is what I find to be really odd. So the leak data supposedly includes contact details like names, phone numbers, and email addresses. And that's for millions and millions of people. But they say that, you know, this is already out there in the public. So I'm looking at this. They're washing their hands of this whole situation. That they have to do a better job, number one, of ensuring that data doesn't get leaked out or doesn't get hacked, or they have total control of this. That's number one. Number two, they're not just saying that it's already out there doesn't basically say that they're fine. They still did something wrong here. Like, come on. I'm just looking at this story, and you know, as I was reading it, I was wondering, this is truly messed up. And they think that they're able to say, yeah, it's okay, just because it's already out there. It's already been leaked before. Get out of here. You guys screwed up bad. And you guys, I don't know what you're doing to fix a problem. I have no record. I tried looking to see what they tried to fix it. Maybe I missed it.
Where's the 2 years? Where's the 2 years?
Yeah, I want my 2 years worth of... anyways, this is a truly messed up story. That's all I got to say. It's a little bit of a rant. But I was just foaming at the mouth reading this thing. It's just totally messed.
I love this. So this is quite a leak, eh? So I just want to note, this is from the article. Following the removal of duplicate records, so there's a bunch of duplicate records, the total number of accounts involved in the breach stands at 8.5 million, 8,460,182. It gives you some examples here. Tons of internal and external emails and contact information, including stuff like postcodes, addresses, job titles, company names, related industries, zip codes. Like, this is a haul, man. This is a big time haul. And I just love the quote. FBI engaged EPA on Friday, April 5th, where EPA determined the data was reportedly taken as publicly available. The data reportedly taken as publicly available, and the reported compromise to be a non-issue. The issue is not the data; it's the compromise. They were able to get all this stuff. Like, that's the problem. Who knows what else they got, right? So I don't know. I just laugh. There's no safe place, man. And finally, and like the stuff that you think is safe, the stuff that you really have no control over, like your work contact list, is the stuff that they're going for now. Like, it's not even like you can, you know, what are you gonna do, go to your IT support team and be like, hey, can we grab malware bytes, because you know my data's online? And then the, you know, IT team goes, oh, don't worry, it was already online anyway. Well, come back later. I'm gonna close this ticket.
How many people are using like a weather app or something that's tied to the EPA, and they signed up using their Google account or whatever?
Oh my god, that information, I love it.
Like, and there's, you know, millions and millions of people, but anyway,
yeah.
Whatever.
Good stuff.
So there's been a recent vulnerability discovered in Ivanti VPN applications that could have serious consequences for its users.
These guys are rolling, eh? These Ivanti guys.
They're on this fire. Is, I think, the fourth time we've talked about them. So yeah. People out there, if you're using one of these devices,
just stop.
Yeah, unplug that guy. Just raw dog.
Take some time. Okay. Just stop doing this.
Anyways, the vulnerability is tracked, and apparently it has a high severity heap overflow in the IPsec component.
Overflows, and man. These overflow vulnerabilities, we talk about these a lot.
they say it could potentially allow hackers to remotely execute malicious code or cause a DDoS attack. And it's vulnerable on the Avanti Connect secure and policy secure VPN gateways. And so far, researchers have identified around 16,000 internet exposed Avanti VPN applications or appliances. Sorry,
Is that a lot?
Yes, that's a small thing.
It's probably a lot.
So reports are out there that attackers are actively exploiting similar vulnerabilities in Avanti products. So, yeah. So what people should do? You should patch this vulnerability as soon as possible. You could find a patch available on Avanti Security Advisories. So they have already released a patch for this. Also, they advised you to scan your network to identify any Avanti VPN applications or appliances and check for specific versions. And also implement network segmentation to limit the potential damage.
You gotta do a lot of work you could just uninstall this garbage and go with something else.
I just get that Ethernet cord and plug it right to your stuff. Nothing in between. You're probably better off. And think about it's one less hop things have to deal with. It's probably going to be much faster. Anyway, I don't know. Do we check if it's publicly traded?
We gotta find out. We got Avanti stock. Let's see.
Is it? No, it's not publicly.
It is traded. Not. It is not. Or is it Avanti? Oh no, it's not. Okay. It does have. They say the value of Avanti is $2 million.
It's
$2 billion. $2 billion.
And that's decreasing by the day every time.
Yeah, for sure.
Like this. Too bad. Like I would have loved to have shorted this stock if it was available. And anyway, what can I say about Avanti stuff? But you know.
There's nothing else to add. Yeah, there's nothing else to add. Like it just
hackers love it.
Go back to the other episode where we tell you about uninstalling Avanti and just replay that. I'll save my voice this morning. Let's go on to the next story.
Okay, let's talk about a new malware that's going to be targeting that has been targeting Magneto services servers. Magento services. And this is a new way for attackers to deal with these Magento stores, and they're injecting malware. And this is according to Google. Magento is an e-commerce platform built on open source technology, which provides online merchants with flexible shopping cart system. So it's a front end for a shopping store, and it's built on open source. But I'll leave it at that. So hackers were able to find an exploit into Magento. And through this, they were able to steal payment data from websites. And this vulnerability is very critical. The common vulnerability security score, this is the CVSS, it scored 9.1, which means this is easily exploited and could cause severe damage. And the vulnerability is described as improper neutralization of special elements. So this allowed the attackers to inject malicious code and potentially take control of those Magento servers. And the attackers so far have leveraged this vulnerability to inject the backdoor on many different websites. And as such, they have so far stolen payment information for the customers that entered this information during the checkout. There is a patch to fix this. There's a security patch that has been already released to address this problem. So people out there should install the latest version. It's going to be either 2.4.6-P3, 2.4.5P5 or 2.4.4P6. All three of those are going to be able to fix this. Install that as soon as possible. Also, if you suspect your Magento site has been compromised, you have to consider getting help from some sort of security people. Don't talk to the Avanti people. They're going to just rug pull you even further. But yeah, this is pretty crazy stuff. And apparently this is it's very, very severe that it's 9.1 on the CVSS scale. So that's 0 to 10. So yeah, I don't know. I never dealt with Magento. I don't know if I have actually. Now I'm thinking about it. Every time I enter an online store, I can't tell if it's Magento or not. But now I'm thinking, if it ever was, do they have my payment information?
Hard to tell. This is a good page for a couple of reasons. Okay, one, this we've obviously been doing the show for about a year, and I have never once heard of this payment skimming, payment skimming vulnerability. I assume this is comparable to what you see at a gas station or convenience store when they throw the extra layer on the debit/credit machine skims your info, you still get to pay, but it keeps a record of everything you punch in and all your authorization data. Kind of neat, honestly. But the thing I want to just point out is on the page here, Sansec has done a really good job in giving you everything you need to prevent further issues and scope out whether or not you've had the problems. So it gives you a next steps section for affected merchants, all the attacker IPs that they've been able to attribute this to, and then a one line of code, it looks like, to do a scan of your store. Fantastic. To your point, there's no really way to know whether or not you've been grabbed by this already, right? That's one thing that this story is missing. You know, there's not been a disclosure or anything like that. Should there be? Will there be? I don't even know. How would they know at this point? Is it too early? Is that the problem? This is the one thing I'm unsure about. This is a much more like boots on the ground, hands-on way to do something about this, but it doesn't really give you the sort of media release that we're used to seeing in the stories we cover for the show.
Yeah. I guess it's up to the merchant or Magento Tax to reach out, because they should have our contact information when we signed in and completed the payment.
Yeah.
So hopefully
Stripe is a popular one, right? That's where the vulnerability was in this case. So like a lot of online stores use Stripe as a backend.
Yeah.
I guess keep an eye out. If you get some weird Uber Eats charges, that's always the giveaway for me and my wife. You know, we didn't get Uber Eats. Why is there another $40 for what?
You know, I've never ordered from Uber Eats or like Skip the Dishes or anything. Eh. And I had because I used Uber, the driving app once, mm-hmm. and then it gave me a $30 voucher for ordering food. And I never used it. And I probably still get that email. It goes to, to a spam. But
that's the only time we use it. We get the same thing, 40% off your next order as long as it's over $50. Like we usually
I got $30 off, period. They basically said you're 30, and I never used it.
It's pretty good, honestly. On like a Sunday afternoon, you don't feel like going out. I don't know. You're a sushi guy, are you not? I think you are.
I'm indifferent to sushi. I could eat it, but I'm not going to go out of my way to
have it. I think that's the best value, because a two-person sushi platter is usually like $50 or $60. So you get your 40% off. You get the thing delivered to your house with all the fix-ins and everything for like $30. It's pretty good. Don't have to wait. Only downside is it's not all you can eat, but I think I might be getting too old for all you can eat anyway. I can't really sit there for 3 hours and just keep dummying. Anyway, story for another time. That was Access of Easy.
No. What?
We have one more. That's right.
More.
That's right.
A bonus story that's coming up, because we've been asked to include this. There's a warning about nation states potentially compromising Microsoft corporate email systems. And this is according to the Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency website. And this is an emergency directive that's been issued to mitigate a significant risk from nation states from compromising Microsoft corporate email systems. So this suggests to me there's potentially a major attack. And this emergency directive was as of April 11th, 2024, or 10, either one, it's last day or two. The directive mandates that all federal agencies in the United States to take steps to defend itself against attacks from a Russian hacking group.
Of course.
And the group is believed to be behind compromising Microsoft accounts. And the compromised Microsoft accounts potentially gave access to emails between agencies and Microsoft, which the hackers then leverage to infiltrate further systems. And so there's immediate action that needs to be taken by the federal agencies to address the compromised credentials, like instituting or implementing tokens, new password, API keys, the whole nine yards. Microsoft, man, because they're a major player in the corporate world. And now they're identifying Russian attackers that may be compromised, have compromised it. This is, I don't know, scary stuff, but hopefully they haven't been able to get too much sensitive information. But given what's at play here, I'm not going to hold my breath.
I look forward to seeing my corporate email account getting a note about this. We didn't talk about today as far as state actors either, the iPhone compromise thing that's floating around.
I'm not even aware of this.
On Reddit. So on Reddit, there's a message on the iPhone forum from someone who got an email from Apple saying that a state actor is trying to compromise their iPhone.
Is that fake or not?
It's legit. And there's just been a few other incidents of it. And one of the things this is weird, right? Because this person is posting on Reddit about this email. And when I look at the email, Apple notes that these attacks are expensive to carry out. They're always done by very sophisticated actors, and you have to go into this like lockdown mode the iPhones have. You can go into lockdown mode, so you can basically just text, call, and do nothing else. And it protects you in a, you know, big way, but it really limits the convenience of the device. Why are people who are sort of low enough on the technological totem pole to post this on Reddit getting attacked by state actors if it's very expensive and difficult to do? My guess, Len, is that it's no longer expensive or difficult. And when I hear stuff like, you know, they're, you know, Russian hackers or whatever going after Microsoft Teams, that now iPhones are at risk. Like the ability of smaller players to do this stuff for cheap and really carpet bomb people who, again, are posting on Reddit when they get the message, that's something you should be worried about. Because these guys are getting this capability for less and less. It's easier and easier. And it seems to me that they're just shooting in the dark here, unless this guy is like related to a high ranking politician or actor or something, who knows, right? But it's just, it seems unlikely that all of a sudden the Reddit crowd is getting these notices. And then on the Microsoft side, yeah, I mean, we talk about this every week. The Teams sort of ecosystem seems to have a lot of vulnerabilities, right? Whether it's email or these other proxy ways into the ecosystem, it's not good. Like, I don't know why you would be storing important information on computers that had to have all these systems on board for work or for whatever, because it's just more, it's more avenues to allow people into your private life. The more of the stuff you have, the more potential you have for problems. And Microsoft, I mean, they'll never have to answer for this, obviously, because they're basically a wing of the US government at this point, but there's vulnerabilities popping up all over the place. And as we've said before, this is an eternal game of cat and mouse between people like you and me who are just trying to live and work and do whatever and use our computers and phones every day, and people like the hacking groups who are doing this stuff. And, you know, I don't know, doesn't it seem to you like right now the hacking groups are as far ahead as they've ever been?
Well, we're reading the stories and it seems like that. But in terms of, well, I want to go back to the iPhone story that you sure. mentioned. I'm still of the camp that it's very expensive and time consuming to get into just about any device. Apple, I've talked about many times about them potentially harvesting data, but in terms of the device being secure, I think they're relatively secure comparatively to, you know, other devices out there. And so Apple may be the one harvesting the data, but in order to break into it, just like any other system, I think you need a lot of time and effort that you have to do it. There's no system out there that's perfect. Some systems out there give you more flexibility than others. Some are just, you know, like the Apple system, you're kind of built, they build a system for you and you're forced to use it. If you want to change something, you don't have any option to do this. But if you go to, say, Linux, for instance, I know it's there's very few Linux phones, but you have more flexibility. You could do whatever you want because it's open source. You have the ability to run libraries. You have the ability to run modules. You have the ability to even compile the kernel. So you have so much flexibility here. Mm-hmm. It's up to you to decide how you want to employ that. So really, I think that hackers, they're going to always be a thing. And it probably has always been a thing for decades. As long as computers existed, they've always been trying to attack and get information. I think we're just probably at the forefront because we're reading a lot of information. It's kind of maybe skewing our judgment than compared to, say, a normie out there. But this kind of stuff, it's more than anything. It shines a light that you as the user have to make sure that you are doing the very best for your privacy. If you have an option to make your private, to improve your privacy, to improve your security, certainly do it. If you don't, well, if something happens, you only have yourself to blame. And if whatever software you're using doesn't give you that option, try to migrate to something else. I know in a corporate world, you're subservient to whatever the corporate environment is forcing upon you, but that is their responsibility. When it comes to your private life, you have a lot of different options out there. Just make sure you choose the right option and do it. And it may seem tough and it might add some extra jumps, extra hurdles you have to go through, but you know what? It's worth it in the end, because once your neighbor gets hacked and loses information and you don't, you could smile. You could sleep well at night and smile at the same time.
Yeah, it could be a problem. I'm sharing my screen here. In terms of the point I made earlier, Apple drops term state-sponsored attacks from its threat notification policy. So maybe there is something to this idea that these things are becoming cheaper. If they don't have to be state sponsored anymore, they're still sending individual messages to users in 92 countries, victims of a possible mercenary spyware attack, dropping the word state sponsored in it's used in previous alerts to refer to such malware attacks. So I don't know. There's something to this. Like, it seems to me, like you mentioned, there's more burden on the consumer than ever before. And not a lot of ways for the average person to kind of figure this stuff out, right? You and me are lucky to be in this ecosystem. We know a bit about, you know, security, privacy, stuff like that. But a lot of people with iPhones just want to go on Instagram and Snapchat, right? They're not really thinking about what the privacy model they're using is. And maybe they should be. Maybe they have to be. That's the next step, right? We'll see. Anyway. Yeah.
They'll sacrifice privacy for convenience all day long. That's your choice.
Yeah. Yeah. That was Access of Easy, everybody. Thanks for stopping in. See you next week if we don't see it before then. And make sure you read the newsletter, subscribe to the YouTube channel, subscribe to the podcast. We'll see ya next Friday. Take care.